and energy are our most valuable resources. But success isn't just about what we do with our time. It's very much about how much of ourselves we bring to the time we have and how we feel about our choices. Welcome to Take Charge of Your Productivity with your host, Penny Zenker. We're here to bring you a whole new perspective on how to manage your precious time and energy. You'll gain key strategies, skills, and the necessary psychology that create the balance you are craving and deserve. Now, here is Penny Zenker.
Everyone, it's Penny Zenker, your host of Take Charge of Your Productivity. On this show, we host great authors, leaders, and entrepreneurs to explore your greatest potential by tapping into the 10 core drivers of time and energy management. And to show how these 10 core drivers come together, I came up with a windmill as a metaphor for human productivity. This windmill has a gear mechanism that works from within, and the smoother, the more consistent, and the faster the blades turn, the more productive you tend to be. So in taking charge of your productivity, there are three segments, or in windmill terminology, blades, that are absolutely critical. They are championship psychology, winning strategies, and sustainable results. And without all three of these, your productivity windmill is underpowered. It's going to turn, but not optimally. Today we're going to have a fantastic show because we're going to talk about accountability. And accountability is really about sustainability. So when we talk about those three blades, even though it comes into other aspects, it's about creating this sustainability, because without accountability, you have no future. Your productivity is undermined, and your productivity is sporadic and unpredictable. And I was talking to somebody when I first got into coaching, and we were talking about the words. I'm very into linguistics. And so when I hear the word accountability, and the way that it's most often used is it has a negative connotation, like consequences. Like, I got to hold people accountable, because they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. So accountability is the consequence. But, when we're thinking about accountability, we shouldn't be focusing, on after the fact and the consequence, but on and at the beginning, which in my opinion is about ownership. So although you can assign a task or a project, ownership is how it's embraced, and that's going to then dictate what happens with that task or project. And my mentor had taught me a great lesson, and he said a great leader doesn't motivate people, but he removes the obstacles that stand between them and their motivation. And I believe that translates into accountability as well. So it starts with the leaders. We're all capable, within, to bring that level of ownership. It's really only that kind of accountability through ownership that really creates productivity. So today we're going to learn a couple of different things. We're going to learn that, accountability of the team comes from the leadership. We're going to understand that leaders empowering is a hoax. This is directly from our guest's a blog that she had done, which I thought that was really interesting. So we're going to talk about that. And we're going to talk about tips on how to increase accountability. And I think it's going to be different than what you think it is. And today's guest is Linda Galindo, and she is an expert in this space. And we were just having a discussion, and she's very direct, and this is going to be a great show today. Linda helps executive leaders realize their definition of success by applying a unique, dynamic, transformational approach to personal accountability. Using her validated proprietary accountability assessment with senior leaders, Linda customizes relevant leadership retreats and coaching to ensure that leadership team effectiveness. Her highly regarded approach with leadership talent increases leadership effectiveness individually and collectively in the organization. Now, Linda is a former radio news personality turned author, educator, and keynote speaker. Her management consulting firm specializing in accountability education to high-potential leaders in healthcare, government, financial service, and non-for-profit. She's an expert in the field of executive leadership and accountability. And over the past 19 years, she has worked with CEOs, surgeons, elected officials, and the leadership of organizations including Intermountain Healthcare, the Sundance Institute, Naval Reactors Facility, Park City Municipal Corporation, Abbott, MetLife, and AAA of Southern New England, and I'm sure many, many more. And she's the author of Way to Grow, The 85% Solution, How Personal Accountability Guarantees Success, No Nonsense Excuses, The Accountability Experience Facilitator's Guide Set, and she's co-authored Where Winners Live, Sell More, Earn More, Achieve More Through Personal Accountability. So without further ado, Linda, it is so great to have you here. We are going to have a really great, raw discussion today.
Thank you, Penny. I'm delighted to be a blade on the windmill, make it go faster, better, smoother.
Absolutely. So tell me, you know, and the listeners here, how did you get passionate about accountability?
Having done news for about 11 years as a broadcast journalist, I started to realize that leaders were changing the definition of accountability depending on working, not working. So when things were working, leaders had no trouble being totally personally accountable for what they were owning and taking credit for. And when things were not working and they were not producing the results, I didn't know about it. No one told me. The weather, the people that work for me, they're the problem. So that intrigued me.
All the finger pointing.
All the finger pointing. That intrigued me that I just got on this really personal mission to say, what is that about? Because I can see it's undoing our culture. And how it's undoing our culture is we're rewarding not being accountable more than being accountable. And is there something I can do about that? Well, if a leader tanks a company and they still get the reward, then how does that teach the value of personal accountability that goes out to the masses? Over and over again, the leader tanks the company. The leader claims they didn't know about it, but they still leave with the reward, the bonus, the stock, the this, mm-hmm. the that. They get bailed out, et cetera. So they privatize the profit and own that fully, and then they push out all the problems and error and debt to everybody else. How could mm-hmm. that work and be sustainable?
So do you suggest a different compensation mechanism to make accountability, you know, start from the top, start there?
I think that's just a Band-Aid. I think it's a mindset shift about accountability individually mm-hmm. first, and then what to do about it becomes evident.
Okay. And so, you know, you've written several, and that's why I know that you're passionate about it. We talked about it, and you've written several books in this area. You know, and I understood by a statistic that I saw on one of your blogs, I think it was, that 91% of the people in organizations think that accountability is important. And if everyone thinks that, why isn't something happening? Why aren't they taking more accountability?
Because we reward not being accountable more than being accountable. So, yes, everyone thinks it's a problem. And when the phone call comes into my office to say, Linda, we want you to come and make them more accountable, I want you to ask yourself a question. What in your life gets better if everyone around you is suddenly more personally accountable? What in your life gets better if everyone around you becomes more personally accountable? If you're a boss or a manager, or even a parent, if everyone becomes more personally accountable, how does your life get better?
And so that's the first question you ask them.
Yeah. I mean, they want it for what? Why do you want people around you to be more? Why do you want me to make them more accountable? And the answers always are, well, I'll be less stressed. People will be more productive. I'll know that people are doing what they say they're going to do. I don't have to babysit stuff. I, you know, will be more able to do my own job instead of their job for them. And I'll say, okay, how many times have you had this thought?
Right.
When someone isn't doing what they're supposed to be doing, I just think to myself, well, it's just easier to do it myself and you take care of it. Rather than what? rather than what? Hold them accountable, right?
Right, right.
So we actually participate in not holding people accountable and rewarding not being accountable by rescue, fixing, and saving underperformance. And then what happens? When I rescue, fix, and save underperformance, I'm tired. That person's like loving me as their boss. I want to be liked more than I want to be effective and stand up and say, you know what, I let this happen and I need to stop. But then they won't like me, and then I'm going to get a bad manager review, and then I won't get my bonus. It's this insidious cycle instead of saying, you know what, the only reason I want them to be more accountable is so that I'm the best boss, best manager, best leader I can possibly be, because it's not about making them more accountable. It's about having them understand how to help me be more accountable. And rescue, fixing, and saving is what gets rewarded, because you race to the finish line and you get it done, but you're exhausted and resentful. So you got to totally change the reason why you want everyone around you to be more accountable, which is to make sure you're the most accountable, effective person you can be. And you stop some of the behaviors that make this a very tedious, tiresome job of rescue, fixing, and saving underperformance, which, by the way, punishes your best performers when you do that. Mm-hmm. When you don't hold your underperformers accountable, your best performers are punished. They get the work of the underperformer, and they don't understand why they want to stay in this organization if that's what happens when you tell me you've brought in the best and brightest. You haven't.
Right.
You've brought in people to do the work of the underperformer. So it's a really very finely tuned culture piece that has to be brought into the full daylight to see what's actually going on and change our reason why, as managers and leaders, we want people around us to be more accountable, because we want to be, as individuals, more personally accountable and be held accountable by them, not us holding them accountable. We want it to work in the other direction.
Right. I mean, how I see that for those leaders, I mean, it's obviously they're over-functioning, right? I have a framework called the productivity zone, and we talk about either side of the zone is, just to keep it simple, is perfectionism and procrastination. And, you know, it's sort of a combination. That rescue, fixing, and saving is a combination of procrastination and perfectionism, you know, in a special little cocktail there. Which you know, which definitely holds their organization back from developing those people, right? Because then they can easily say, well, you're going to do it anyway, right? There could be an element of controlling in there too, is if you don't give people the ownership of something and they know that you're going to come in and redo it or do it because it wasn't done to their satisfaction or whatever, then they, you know, then they're like, what's the point?
Absolutely. And oftentimes when I'm coaching an executive and they say, well, you know, to have it done right, you have to do it yourself. And I know I'm
right.
controlling, and I know I'm, you know, a perfectionist. And I'll say, okay, so how is that working for you? Why am I sitting
right.
here? What is it you have to make a commitment to change? And it's something your spouse has probably been telling you for years. So why am I sitting here? Personal accountability is not a training. I'm not going to train you to be more personally accountable. It's a decision. You can't mandate personal accountability. You can only demonstrate it. So if you continue with controlling behavior, your perfectionism when it isn't really necessary, the only way to get it done is to do it myself, et cetera, then you're lying about wanting low stress, productivity, and job satisfaction. You're just flat out lying. It's about
right,
you,
but Linda, I can't let it fail. Don't you hear this? But Linda, I can't let it fail. How can I let that fail? Then it'll cost the organization money.
It does anyway.
Cost more, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. And I say, you know, okay, you're absolutely right. You can't let it fail. What's your point? Because that hasn't worked up to now. It absolutely has to have the margin of ability. It has to have that space to fail. We know that. That's how we all learned. It's a concept in our head. But when push comes to shove, you claim it's about not letting it fail. It's about you not failing, not about the organization. If you put the organization first, failure is absolutely an option, unless, of course, it's life and death. And getting,
right.
you know, the paragraph to line the way you like is not life and death. The style difference is our difference in generations. But if you're not clear about what it is that has to be the result, you're not going to be result-focused. You're going to be activity-focused.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the people we don't have any interest in working for and are easy to dismiss. Because as we get more and more productive, we need less and less actual activity time, you know, crossing T's, dotting I's when it's not necessary. It doesn't have to be the way you do it. You have to be able to tell whether the person has the skill to do it. So making a distinction between how they do it and whether they can do it is the role of a manager or a leader, not to get the work done by rescue, fixing, and saving.
Right, because it stifles innovation, right? If you're going to give these people the ownership, then they can be creative in finding new ways to accomplish it. And that's, you know, that's important. Innovation is important for organizations and for their growth.
If organizations held to what people were accountable for example, a deadline. When you have a deadline and clear resources, and that's all you have to work with, people get very creative. But if people miss the deadline and you make excuses and finger point and blame, then you've set it up for this kind of culture over and over and over again not working. So the top three things people can do today to make sure they are behaving a culture in which accountability is of high value for low stress, productivity, and job satisfaction, top three things they could do today. One, talk to, not about other people. Period. Just talk. Do not be the person who I cannot
yeah.
count on to talk to me about what they're experiencing as a problem. It goes to HR, then it goes to, you know, the lunch table, and it's all these things. Why isn't someone telling me what the challenge is? And you can do it without a confrontation simply by saying, I'm concerned, I'm frustrated, I'm experiencing this, I need some feedback. So I understand when everyone shows up at the meeting and people are not ready according to what was agreed to, what is supposed to happen? I'm not clear, so I need some feedback. Yesterday was in a meeting with you, Penny, and I heard a huge challenge when I said that was not the agreement and this is what I came prepared to do. And I heard an attack. I don't understand why that happened. Can I get some feedback? Am I
mm-hmm.
not supposed to bring those things up? So talk to, not about, one.
Right.
Second,
and be
thing.
Direct. That's what you're saying there. I just want to put it into other words for people is be direct and have the conversation. I totally agree with that because you know, I talk about blaming and excuses and those types of things as absolute productivity killers. So I love that. So number one, talk to, not about other people. All right, go ahead. What's number two?
And in being direct, let me just add, it's practicing
sure.
not saying you. You know, you
yeah.
said this to me, and so you shut me down and you demean me. It's like, I don't understand what happened, and I want some feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll often say things like, well, you just need to grow tougher skin. You just got to let these
right.
things. I'll say, you know, okay, thanks. I just wanted to check it out. And I'm always open for feedback or input because I want to be here and I want to be productive.
Right.
And I didn't understand what just happened. Just get feedback.
Absolutely.
Be direct. Have feedback. Use I. Don't say the word you or you start a fight.
Yeah.
The second thing is no meeting after the meeting. You know that meeting in the parking lot, the stairwell, somebody's cubicle, where everybody pipes up but didn't say it in the meeting. And when I say to people, you know, I was sitting in there and there was a lot of things that were not clear and no one asked a question to get clear. How come?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, 2 years ago, someone asked a question and they went in this room and they never came out.
Right.
Really? were you there? No, I just heard that's what happened. So this meeting after the meeting thing isn't about executing on what we agree to. It's about that stuff we talk about. I can't believe they're going to make us do this. You know, I don't understand how we're supposed to do this in addition to everything else. I don't agree with it. No one asks us. I have to be personally accountable and value accountability. I have to say, I've got to raise my own hand, and that requires me to be brave and ask my question. Are you saying this is required of all of us in addition to everything else and no additional resources? I just want to be very clear so I can own this and then reprioritize or go get help in reprioritizing.
Right.
Instead of just being silent, and silence is agreement.
It
so
is.
If you walk out
silence
of the room
and acceptance.
You start up, then you're going to have a problem.
Yeah. You know what's funny about that is because I'm always the one who asks a lot of questions and will ask the question that nobody else wants to ask in the room. And then afterwards, people are like, oh, I'm so glad you asked that, you know. So I think one of the challenges is, and maybe you can speak to this, is that people want to ask that question, but they're afraid. They're afraid of the consequences or maybe because it is that culture, but they don't ask. Like what could you suggest to people to help to give them the courage to ask?
Well, in terms of I'm afraid, I would say baloney. Go talk directly to the person you're afraid of. When I'm in meetings, I want to participate fully, and I'm afraid to ask, and so I don't understand, you know, what I can do because I want to be here and ask questions. And this woman said, okay, I'm going to try that. And her boss said back to her, if you want to ask a question, you have to formulate it perfectly. And she said, I don't know what that means. What does formulate the question perfectly mean? So that I can be there and do what I want to do, because she had seen so many people shut down when they did ask a question and that boss, you know, said, I'm not even going to dignify that with a response or something to that effect. And so
she
realized she went and talked to the boss directly and said, I want to understand, what does formulate a question perfectly mean? So I can do that, because I don't want to use you as my excuse not to ask my questions. And the boss thought about how strange that was now that I think about it, that was a strange thing to request of people. So the awareness of it alone stopped the insanity of expecting that of individuals. I say stop listening to everybody else's fear and go and directly say, not at the time it's happening, I want to be here and participate. Now, sometimes you'll get the response, it's the way I am. If you can't toughen up, I don't know what to tell you. Then you have to make a decision, is this where I want to be? Sometimes it is not a good environment. Your fear or your hesitance is justified, and that's when you stop making it okay. It's like, this is below my ability to perform. And there are plenty of places that want you. You have to really understand that.
Isn't that accountability as well, Linda? Isn't that accountability as well? Is you're holding the leader accountable, you know, to create a safe space. So I think that that's, you know, if people thought of it in a different way, that it's their obligation to help support that leader, be a better leader, right? Manage your manager. By asking them questions, because you're helping them to, you know, to be a better leader, and saying, I'm not going to accept, you know, being talked to like that.
And it is even less confrontational than that. It is, I don't understand what's happening when that happens, and I need some feedback. And if that answer from them is not okay, then you have to make a decision. Because they're not going to change. Look, they get their goals. Their boss loves them. They get all of their perks for doing what they're doing because they're getting the result. The boss doesn't care that you're getting talked to in a certain way. That person that I get called in to coach says, no one ever told me this, because they sit in fear and talk to each other about the boss. I'll say, well, you got to create an environment which that is okay. But that's at a level of basic management skill. I mean, that's not even at the level we're talking about where I bring accountability into an organization. It's important, certainly. But I'm saying to people, you have total personal accountability for yourself. Don't use other people as your excuse not to live up to your total personal accountability. Talk to, not about, don't meet after a meeting. And the third thing is, don't rescue, fix, and save underperformance. stop for a second and say, in the past, I've allowed this, but I'm going to stop. I need this to be done right and be effective with it. So we might miss the deadline. We might not get everybody's stuff in for the team reward, but I have to stop being the one that gets in here. I'm treating you in the most demeaning way possible when I rescue, fix, and save performance you're capable of. And I'm going to stop doing that. And so I'm willing to take the hit of being not liked for a little while I reverse course on what I've been doing that's been creating this culture of rescue, fix, save, and the heroics are getting rewarded, not good mm-hmm. quality work.
Mm-hmm. Those are three absolutely great things. You know, are there any other mistakes that you find that leaders make around accountability? I mean, we talked about the rescue, fix, and save. Is there anything else that they need to be aware of?
They often set the goal, but they don't define success. So I see this all the time, where a group of people will be told by a chief operating officer, you're empowered to do X, Y, Z. And I want, you know, a list of recommendations on how we can do this by, you know, November 12th. And so the room leaves with an understanding of what they think success for what they were just told is. And some of them will say, oh, well, what he wants is a list of things that will improve quality in the organization. And the other half of the room thinks, well, what he wants is for us to create and implement a program that will improve quality throughout the organization. So one thinks we're just going to hand them a list, and the other group thinks the goal is to implement a program. And they've had this hour meeting, and he's laid out what he wants from them, and they've been selected as a team to do this. And they all leave with a different definition of what success is going to be. And so then at the end of the day, when they compile the list of recommendations and hand it to them, and then they never hear anything again, they're demoralized, they feel like it failed, whereas maybe some of them say, oh, we did what we were asked to do. That was great. It's like, whatever happened to that? Well, how come nothing ever was a follow? Oh, we did what we were asked to do, but nothing happened. Well, well, we never said anything was going to happen. No, we were going to implement a quality program. That's what we told all those people we interviewed, and that's what we told all the groups that we had brown bag lunches that were here to figure out a plan to implement. So often, and if you thought about it in your own work life today, if you're working with a group of people and you stopped and you said, before we do another thing, is the goal here to go live with this, as an example, on September 24? Is that our goal? Yes. What's our definition of success for this? And you will see as many answers as there are people in the room. And so a big mistake is that, yes, we all are clear on the goal, but we're not clear on the definition of success. So I just work with an IT department in which the goal was go live on a certain date with a new software. But the definition of success was stuff like, well, that everybody can do it without having to go to training. Well, that we never have to back out of any of the stuff we implemented in the first place. You know, it was all over the place. So they finally came up with a concerted, clear definition of success they could own. And it was that 6 months from the go live date, there were no workarounds in what they had put in place. That when there was a problem, people didn't work around it or start complaining or talking about it to each other. They actually used the process to solve problems. And at the 6 month mark is when they would have their celebration of success if they could implement this upfront, accountable for not having workarounds as went through the process. Find success. That's another mistake I see people not making.
That's a great one. So, absolutely, right? No clarity. Everybody thinks something different. I mean, that's a disaster waiting to happen.
Absolutely. If you want to take charge of your productivity, it's absolutely a core driver to define success. So in the 85% solution, how personal accountability guarantees success, no nonsense, no excuses, page 90, that's where I point people all the time. I say, so tell me what success is, because my success is your success, but you have to tell me what success is to you. First of all, in your professional life or as a person or as a person who contributes to the community, whatever it is, mm-hmm. the only way I can be successful is if you're successful. So tell me what success is to you, and then I can get you there. But if you're just telling me what your goals are, I'm not as effective in assisting you as a leader to be effective.
Absolutely. I asked that in my initial questionnaire as well, is how will you know you're successful? How will we know this project is a success? So I think it is really key. And what I'm taking away for, you know, the listeners is, so after you've met with your group and you've talked about your goals, you know, ask, okay, what did you understand? Make sure that there's a consensus in the room of understanding before you let everybody loose, right? Because questions are so powerful and so important.
And consensus takes huge, huge maturity and personal accountability, because consensus is not agreement. It's agreement to support. So if you're telling me you're going to make this decision or have this discussion and come to consensus, it means you've got people with a high level of personal responsibility and personal accountability in the room, that their mindset is, I own this, that individually and collectively, I own this. So let me give you an analogy. If you go in to have surgery and you're the person getting the surgery and you get to ask everyone who's going to touch you, on a scale of 0 to 100%, how much personal accountability are you taking for this being successful, a good outcome? What answer do you want from every person who's going to be involved in that surgery?
100%, yes. Baby.
100%. So why aren't we like that? You know, that's life or death. But what will happen in that surgical suite is somebody will say, well, for my part, I'm 100%. But I can't control these other people. But we're a surgical team. You're not a team if you're not holding each other accountable. You're not a team if you are not holding each other accountable. You don't need a team manager. You need a team leader if you're holding each other accountable. So it doesn't mean we do each other's roles. But we don't say, when someone calls out, didn't go through the checklist, and that's what we agreed to do as a team before we started this, and that person says, you're not the boss of me, shut up.
Uh-huh.
You know, it is no, thank you. We're holding each other accountable. But if someone says, well, in this surgery, for my part, I'm here for you 100%, that's very different than 100% individually and collectively at the same time.
That right. Well, it leaves you with a different level of confidence, doesn't it? I mean, if even though they're still saying 100%, just with that extra part of my part, they're disassociating themselves with the rest of the performance of the team, which is, as you said, that's not a good sign. That means there's somehow a trust issue that needs to be dealt with.
Where you see that silos in organizations where they'll say, my department hit its goals, but the organization failed overall to meet their productivity year over year or their sales year over year. So to see it as my part is very destructive, and it's infuriating and frustrating to those who have to interdepend on other departments, especially in so-called matrixed organizations, because accountability isn't clear. It's if you get your part done, you get the reward, and that's ridiculous. And people are saying, well, then I have to depend on these losers over here, and that's not fair. Right. You know, I did my part. It's a mindset change. It's to say, if they're more accountable, they're going to hold you to your accountability, and that's what you're trying to avoid. You're not trying to make them more accountable. You're trying to avoid being accountable yourself, unless you say, Linda, come in, and let us press the reset button on what personal accountability is and means, so that I'm the most challenged, best effective leader or manager I can possibly be. And I will tell you, Penny, most leaders don't want anything to do with any of that, because they're comfortable 2 or 3 or 4 years away from their retirement, or their RIP now, retired in place. And they talk a good game, but this rigor is what we have to have now and is avoided like the plague.
Well, because you're going to hold them accountable. I brought you in to hold everyone else accountable, not me, right?
Right, right. But, you know, the transformation in that leader when they switch is, it's unbelievable. And it's it fuels me endlessly, because it's very humbling to see a leader or even a manager or a leader, and I make a very clear distinction between the two, have the switch go off to say, oh, well, of course I'm going to talk to you not about no meeting after the meeting, stop, rescue, fixing, saving. And there's a list of 12 behaviors that in total that keep this, you know, front and center in the culture. But you gotta know you're ready for it. So I do a pre-assessment, and I ask some questions ahead of time to say, you might just want gimmicks and techniques and tactics to make them more accountable. That's not what I do. It is leadership. You've got to lead this. You can't mandate accountability. You can only demonstrate it. So let's talk about what mixed message you're sending when you say this, but you do this. And there's no wiggle room. That's the fun part. Zero wiggle room in this process. It's just like time. There's only this. Everybody has the exact same parameter of time. And so it's accountability. Everybody has the exact same total personal accountability available to them. It's not a respecter of position or authority level. You can't empower people to it. They have to self-empower to it. That's the only kind of empowerment there is. Empowering people is a big fat hoax. Ridiculous to say I'm empowering you, because you can't. You can provide an environment for me to empower myself. And that takes risk. It takes the risk of failure. And when it's non-negotiable, you have to do it this way, then tell me that. Otherwise, be clear about the result you want, and I'll be accountable to it. That's the expectation.
So let me ask you a question. So if you see an organization that is, you know, the leader is saying that people aren't being held accountable, from what I'm hearing is that it's really an indication that the leader is not being accountable for themselves, and it's fostering that environment. Am I understanding that correctly?
You can have the certificate, you have graduated. Yes, that's it.
So, because I think that's a hard pill for a lot of people to swallow. And so that's why I wanted to repeat it like that. So, you know, if you see, and this goes for, you know, this is probably isn't just accountability. This is other areas as well, you know, around time management and various different aspects, is if you see your staff, and by the way, parents, if you see your kids, you know, this is cross-contextual, behaving in a certain way, we have to look at ourselves and say, what do I need to do in myself to represent what it is and the way that they should behave? Because they're somewhat mimicking, and it's a result of our behavior. And I think it's so hard for people to understand. But it's a fact. I mean, that was an eye-opener for me. I hate to say it. In my divorce, is I had to look at me and say, okay, you know, how did I create this behavior, right? And we have to take a strong, hard look at ourselves if we want to grow our business, if we want to grow personally, professionally, develop wonderful children. We have to be able to open and honestly look at ourselves and say, you know, how can I, because we can only control ourselves, right? So we can influence others, but we can only control ourselves. What do I need to do to show up, you know, as you said, to demonstrate it and be consistent?
You know, and potential clients are so disappointed to learn that by me coming in, I'm not going to make them more accountable. They're just profoundly disappointed. That isn't the message. It's like the bumper sticker on my car. It says, hang up and drive. And people come up to me all the time and say, I love that bumper sticker. And I pull one out and I say, here, you can have one too. Oh, no, thank you. No, thank you. I don't like to put things on my car. And I'll say, well, what? I said, okay, so then I had a window cling made so that you wouldn't get the sticky stuff on your car. And people wouldn't even take that. They'd say, oh, I'll take one for my teenager. I'll take one for my husband. But I don't want to put one on my own car. And it's like, see, you got to be the example of what you expect.
Right.
But it can't be a good idea for everyone else. You're exactly right. It is very challenging. But I will tell you this, as sure as I'm standing here breathing and talking to you, it's the competitive advantage now. Mm. A culture in which accountability is at the highest possible level per individual, once they're educated, not trained, educated to a new reality of what it is and that they're in total control of it, you cannot, it's like a train, you know, a runaway train. You have to be ready to really up your game once people understand they don't need you to be effective and personally accountable. They'll ask clarifying questions. They'll want to own it fully going in. They'll, you know, not, mm-hmm. they won't stand for ambiguity when it's not necessary. And so if you don't want to up your game, then the last thing you should do is bring personal accountability into the organization.
Okay, well, there then. Nobody wants to up their game, right? They're just,
they think they do.
What did chin chatter, I think, was my dear friend Thomas Duncan told me that he, his mentor Jim Brown, who I know very well, calls that chin chatter, is that they say what you want to hear. Yes, I want to change it, right? And then, but it's just chin chatter. Their mouth is moving and saying what you want to hear, but it's not what they're doing.
And I have real empathy for the challenge of it. Again, I mean, I talk about it. It's funny at times, but the leaders that move through this for themselves, they go through a very profound personal insight, like not holding people accountable is demeaning to them. It's a demeaning behavior. It's positive and productive and developmental when you say, I need to stop fixing and rescuing, getting the reward for coming through at the end in this way that just eats people up. I need to stop. So the first thing they do when they go back from seeing it differently is, I need to be supported and being accountable. So I'm going to talk to you not about, I'm not going to have meetings after the meeting. I'm not mm-hmm. going to rescue, fix, and save underperformance. And I want all of you to know you have permission to hold me accountable to that. I need help. I need support. Just like physical exercise and training, you get a coach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I need you to count for me while I, you know, grunt through these lunges, because I just have to, you know, focus on this thing. And so help
right.
me out. And that's very different than coming back and saying, I learned ways to make you more accountable. You're the problem. Then everybody just, you know, shakes their head.
Right. Oh, yeah. Shut down, right? Total shutdown.
Yeah.
It has to, I mean, there's a lot of respect that comes from somebody who stands up and says, hey, look, I realize I'm the problem. And here's what I'm willing to do for you to, you know, and for me to make this happen. So I think that go ahead.
I said a lot of times people will say after they hear me speak, my boss really needs to hear this. And I'll say, you know, they're probably making money and hitting their goals. So why? From their perspective, why? I get my result. It's I need to hear this. What can I do? Because to the person I talk to where there's a quote unquote accountability problem, they're right about what they're telling me is not working. They're absolutely right. But they have to go back to what their point is. Is your point mm-hmm. that you want something to change? Because that doesn't work. I want to be low stress, productive, and job satisfied. And the number one contributor to that is to be totally personally accountable, starting with yourself and your behaviors. And just because everybody else is doing it, again, you can't use them as your excuse. It does put the onus on us in a very invigorating way, and it does require individual courage. You've got to be brave and not use other people as your excuse.
So what do you recommend across teams? You know, you mentioned something that's a key thing. I've seen that a lot where, you know, the teams are in these silos and they're not, especially with sales teams and operations, right? Well, you sold something that, you know, we can't deliver in that time frame and we weren't involved. And, you know, the back and forth that goes on, you know, if, you know, what are some tips that you recommend in that, in working with those types of environments?
Well, 9 times out of 10, when I hear the word team and I go and interact with the group, if it's mm-hmm. a team, I'm an astronaut. It's not even close. So part of it is applying tools to something that isn't, you know, what it's like a hammer, but that's not a nail. So I say what you need here is to be managed, because you break out into these fights over you sold something that I didn't agree to, or you said yes when our timeline can't support that. I just say, you know, who's the manager and is everybody clear on their role? Stop saying team. This is a group of people trying to affect this. When it's a team, we all sit down and up front, we do agree. And So if I stop saying, this is how a team should behave, I stop being so frustrated. It's somebody mm-hmm. has authority to call the prioritization, overcommit us to, you know, say things just to get the sell, et cetera. And that's what I choose to work in every day. Or I call out, hey, so I'm clear. Can we all get very, very clear on our roles? Because I am all over the place and don't understand the priority. And unless you do that, people do what they like to do instead of what they need to do. So, you know, most of the time I see when people say, yeah, the teams in this organization don't work, I'll say, well, you don't have any teams that I can see because right. You're not holding each other accountable. You need to get to start at, let's be well managed. What's the goal? Who are the people that are going to affect this goal happening? What are their roles? And have they communicated their roles to each other? Who has the authority? So everyone's empowered to call for clarity. Everybody. I'm not clear. Well, then you're the stupidest person on earth. Okay, I'm the stupidest person on earth. And I'm still not clear.
Right.
And
humor
that's
me,
when you
right?
get the person. Yeah, that's when the person says in the hallway, gosh, I'm really glad you said that. And I said, well, what I'd really appreciate is all of us now saying it. Because mm-hmm. I'm not going to be the one counted on to say I'm not clear. I want to be a part of something great. And mm-hmm. I don't understand why I'm doing this when everyone's saying this is what we're trying to get done. I just need clarity. It doesn't make me stupid unless you want it to, but it just means I'm not clear. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
Get clear.
Right. You know, I find that to be the biggest thing that people say of why they're not, let's say, managing these items is we don't have the time, right? I'm sure you've heard that. Oh, because it does. It takes time to go through, you know, a mission, vision, to go through roles, to talk about and get consensus or to collaborate on something, you know. But that's the number one thing I hear is people are like, well, we don't have the time, right? And they're not appreciating, in my opinion, what the value of that is for the organization and how much it's costing them not to do it.
Well, and when someone says to me, we don't have time, I say, you're right, and just look at them. You don't have time. You're absolutely right. Bye. Because they're right. They don't have time. But so there's nothing to do with that except agree with them, in my opinion. So I don't understand. What is it you're after then? If you don't have time, then what are we doing? Because I have to trust you. You're an expert at what you're doing. And they have to think about that. Well, I don't have time. Okay. If I could show you a way to rethink that answer, would you mm-hmm. be willing to look at it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, do you have time to learn a way to rethink that answer? That's when you have to have this commitment. Everybody in the room, no devices, no this is and that. And we're going to mm-hmm. turn how you're looking at this on its head. And it's going to have a price to it. The price is not time, by the way. The price is accountability. And mm-hmm. we're going to take away all your excuses for the level of work you do and the productivity you have. And we're going to see unvarnished what your work product is without your excuses. That scares the crap out of people. It's like, wait a minute. I want to have this excuse so that when it comes in, just screeching into the deadline heroically, you know, you're going to take that away? Well,
right.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how to live without that. Okay. I'm just saying. I'm just going to give you a choice. Right now, you're pretending like you're stuck in this thing. I'm going to give you a choice. And I don't frankly care what choice you make. I don't care. I like you fine how you are. If that crazy makes you happy, keep doing the crazy. If I show you a different way and you can make, you know, look at all the time you save by talking to, not about, don't meet after the meeting, and not rescue, fixing, and saving underperformance. In the short term, you take a hit in productivity, no question. No question in the short term you take a hit. If you're not willing to take that hit, it's like saying you're going to change the tire on the car without stopping it. And that doesn't make any sense. That's just crazy. And if that crazy works for you, keep going. But
right.
I can it lets me compete with you so much easier. It's so easy to compete with you. It's ridiculous. If you won't take the hit, you know, people say, well, I want the one that lets me keep the car going while I'm changing the tire. And many of my leaders said, no, 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 no. If Linda taught me one thing, you have to stop the car and let him change the tire and put all the bolts on securely and then go. And then exponentially your delta just jumps like crazy.
It's a great analogy because you wouldn't even think of doing that, right? And yet we do it all the time. We do it all the time. So I love that analogy. I'm gonna totally borrow that from you.
Well, not only do you get it done, you get rewarded by, they say, that was so great, let's make the car go faster. It's like, okay, please. If you want to sustain accountability, they're all tired now. So let's, you know, let them do a day's work instead of upping the ante all the time and rewarding them with, oh, wow, that was great, do more. Your capacity is a real issue. You got to pay attention to it.
Absolutely. Well, that is something that's interesting today, and I wish we had more time. We only have less than 10 minutes now. But capacity is something, as it seems like, managers and leaders, you know, actually I wouldn't consider a leader to do that, but managers are pushing their people beyond what their capacity actually is and not, you know, it seems that way. So do you have something quick to mention around that, or is that another show in itself?
It is a show in of itself, but that's a bit, little bit of a victim setup. Managers are not pushing people as much as people are accepting mandate versus saying, I want to be clear and tell the truth about what I'm capable of. And there are times when we have to dig deep, and I understand that. But if this is the job from here on out, I've got to make a new decision. And people are making it all the time. It's not lack of work ethic. It's lack of understanding the capacity of a person and telling the truth about it. So if you want to stay up till 3 a.m. and get the job done and then go on to the next position, the person coming in has no idea how all that got done in a sane work life. So it's just basically telling the truth. And to your point, it's using your calendar. It's saying, I don't have a to-do list. I tell people who are overcommitted, get rid of the to-do list and put everything in time so you can show very visibly what's going on and get some feedback and input to be as effective as you can possibly be.
Well, that's true because it helps you to see what capacity you actually have. You know, we have a tendency to overestimate what we can do in a day, but underestimate what we can do in a week or a month. So it is important that we lay it out to see, you know, what capacity we really have, because we're not looking at it accurately if we're just looking at a list of things to do without any indication of how much time each one's going to take, et cetera.
Exactly. And we lie all the time. And if you put it in your calendar, there it is. That's what everybody else has to work with too, these segments of time. And what you risk is showing, well, maybe you can't get this much done because you're incompetent or because you don't use the tools that you were taught to use or because it has to be done your way. And that's what you risk, exposure, transparency, which is one of those things you have to be accountable and to say, I need some help. What's the priority here? So you do what you need to do, not what you like to do first.
Right. Absolutely. So we only have a few minutes left. I didn't ask you yet the question I ask every guest, so I need to ask you that before we wrap up is, you know, how do you define productivity and why?
It's a capacity to perform with the skills and talents that I have and within the same confines as everyone else, you know, the span of a day. So my productivity is the capacity I have to perform with the skills I have. And that then just says, if someone asks me to do something outside my skill set, I want to bring someone else's productivity into bear to get that to happen for what I agreed to do. So productivity is just joy, pure unadulterated joy. My skill, my vision, my talent line up, and it's endless fuel when I'm very clear on skill and vision and capacity to perform.
I like that, right? It's when we're in the flow. That's when we're productive, when we have that clarity.
Yep.
So thank you so much for being here. You know, how can people get a hold of you? They want to know more. They want to get your books. You know, where would we send them?
My name is my website, Linda, LindaGalindo, lindagalindo.com. I'm on Facebook, lindagalindo.accountability. I have a blog on my website, lindagalindo.com, and my books are on Amazon. Just type in Linda Galindo, author. If you Google me, Linda Galindo, I'm not the flamenco dancer that comes up as Linda Galindo, but you will see a clear delineation between the choices to look me up. But the best way to get a hold of me is my website, lindagalindo.com, and I have a fabulous blog, and the books are fantastic. Just they're about you. The books are about you. If you want to up your personal accountability to lower your stress and to be productive, right along the lines of what you talk about, Penny, this is just an added tool in your toolbox, but it can be life-changing.
Absolutely, it can be, and not just for you, right? I think the most important part of what we heard today was that your personal accountability has a ripple effect to everybody around you, whether it's your kids, whether it's the people that you work with, that it is, and it makes you feel good.
Makes you feel good. You got that 100. No law or rule or mandate says you can't live up to your own total personal accountability. Less stress, productivity, job satisfaction, guaranteed.
I like it. I like it. Well, thank you so much for being here. This was a really great show and definitely a different perspective on accountability.
My thrill. Thank you, Penny.
And for all you listeners, just to give a quick summary of what we talked about today is, if you're managing a team, you're leading a team, everybody wants to be a part of something great. And it all starts with you and your leadership. So personal accountability, if you're not feeling that in your team, you have to take a look at yourself and see what can you do. With the three tips that we did get, I understand there's 12 altogether. I don't know about you guys, but I want to get all 12, so I'm going out to read all these books because I think Linda's spot on with everything that she's saying. Those three tips of what you can do if you just change this now in your work environment is to talk to, not about, other people. That was number one. Number two, no meeting after the meeting. Discuss everything direct and upfront to get clarity in the meeting so that is not necessary. And just avoid it completely because it is all of these things are affecting your productivity. And number three, don't rescue, fix, and save a substandard performance. So these three things, when you start getting accountability and working on those three things, you're going to see a change in your organization. You're going to see a change in the respect that you receive from your team and in how you feel about yourself. So thank you all for being here. You know, we are dedicated to providing great shows with great guests, and I thank you for being here, taking your time to develop yourself further. And I'd love to hear your comments or your suggestions on other people and topics that you want to hear about. From time to time, when we can, we'll be taking questions. So you can also call in. You can write this number down. It is 646-787-8457 for the future. So join us next week as we continue to provide you with amazing experts in each of the 10 core drivers that are going to dramatically increase your productivity. So until next week, this is Penny Zenker reminding you to take charge of your time and energy. And whatever you do, stop managing your time. It's not about time. It's about managing your energy. And this show absolutely showed that in terms of accountability. Thanks, everyone. See you next week.
A 10 to 50% productivity increase on a daily basis. Does that sound incredible? It feels incredible. Penny Zenker's clients around the world are using the Take Charge techniques to achieve more of their goals. Start by going to TakeChargeRadio.com. You'll find access to a self-assessment and a 30-day coaching journal to start your process. Go there today, and who knows how much more you'll be accomplishing tomorrow. Visit TakeChargeRadio.com.